This is Hustle, a podcast by Funsize about mobile product design. I'm your host for today's episode, Danielle Moser, project manager at Funsize. Rick is at home on paternity leave, probably telling dad jokes to his very fresh, tiny baby, born just a couple days ago. With us in studio, co-hosting with me is Anthony Armendariz, partner, CEO, awesome guy at Funsize.
Hey.
Today's sponsor is Pingboard. It's a company culture tool that helps you manage your teams. Learn more about it at their website, pingboard.com. Today in studio with us, we have some fun friends from Photoshop, Adobe Photoshop team. We have Brady and Seth. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you're doing in Austin, what's going on?
Seth says I have to go first. I'm Brady. I'm a product designer on Photoshop. No, what do you want to know? Like, where am I from? Like,
what are you, where are you from? Where do you hail from?
I was born in Portland, but I grew up in the DC area.
Very cool.
And I've been in the Bay Area, in San Francisco area for about 11 years now, I guess.
Awesome. So what do you do at Photoshop, and what did you do before?
Before Photoshop, well, I've been at Adobe for about 4.5 years now. And before that, I was doing design program management inside their group. But before I joined Adobe, I was doing freelance web and graphic design, a lot of WordPress, that kind of thing.
Awesome.
I was also home with two tiny babies for a while, so that I was doing freelance was a good choice for me for a while. And before that, I was in-house web and graphic design for like a 100-person company that totally was like the definition of Big Brother. It was like completely creepy. But then now I moved over to the Photoshop team, and I've been working on Photoshop for about 2 years. And here I am.
Awesome.
All right, so that's Brady Evans, and we also have in studio Seth Shaw.
Yeah, so I'm Seth. I'm another one of the product designers on Photoshop. And I've been in Adobe for 3 years now. The past year, I've been working on Photoshop. So before, I was on some smaller internal projects. I was actually brought on board to work on the Creative Cloud, the web portion of it. For that, like, from Ohio originally, and I lived in Portland for a little bit, and then I moved down to the Bay Area. So before I started at Adobe, I was doing mostly marketing and digital website design and that stuff at a small agency like Funsize. So yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Thanks, guys. Okay, so today our topic, which you guys brought to us, is really awesome. Design that doesn't ship, does it count? Or...
And make sure you enunciate ship.
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 no ship design. alternative title, ships or it didn't happen. Before we get into that, though, just as an icebreaker, because we were talking about this a little bit earlier... How do you say the plural of you all? Because down here in Texas, it is y'all.
And I'll start because mine's less interesting. I actually enjoy saying y'all. And sometimes I'll just say you. All.
I like how they said in Philly, use guys.
Use guys.
Use guys.
Use guys is good.
That's good.
So... I switch it up between yins and y'all, being from like Western or Eastern Ohio.
You
and,
can't say yins. What does that even mean? Yins, how do you spell yins?
There's a couple ways. Like, you can do Y-O-U-N-S, or you can do Y-I-N-Z.
Is that like yins. Legit? Like, I can look that up in the dictionary, and it says yins.
Yins, and then you just kind of start compressing it, and it just becomes yins.
Is it somehow related to like youngins? Because I've heard no, completely different.
You uns. Okay.
I'm not.
People in Pittsburgh are called yinzers.
Shut it! Really?
Uh-huh.
Yinzers?
Yeah.
That's
weird.
Yinzers.
Yeah.
Huh. Fun. Cool. Great. Thank you. Good icebreaker. All right. So let's get into it. Brady, I understand you have some strong opinions about design that hasn't seen the light of day. I can kind of open this up. So this kind of conversation kind of revolves around the dilemma that there's a lot of great looking design on the web, sites like Behance and Dribbble, you get these like amazing looking shots of conceptual design that doesn't actually exist anywhere that you can touch it or interact with it. So Brady, why don't you kick us off and give your opinions on this?
So I'm not as dogmatic. It's fun to be dogmatic. It's like what the internet is built on, right? Is extreme dogmatism. But I'm not actually completely I think it's important. Just want to say before I say what I actually think. I think this too, but it's important that people get to play. You know, playful, you know, solo storming or you know, designing for your own thoughts. I have a whole sketchbook. Obviously, none of that is shipped. Like, I draw a lot. I draw in Photoshop a lot. I get ideas that way, but they are nascent. And so what when you work on a project that is as front and center as something like Photoshop is, you know, people throw over some redesigns, for instance. You know, like, I fixed it. I fixed Photoshop for you.
Done.
Here you go.
Problem solved.
All set. And even internally, we have, you know, stuff like that happens. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog competitive design world in there. And so oftentimes, you know, you'll end up in conversations where, you know, why this or why that, or, you know, why can't you reorder this, or, you know, and there's real technical constraints on the engineering side with a 25-year-old project. And then there's huge constraints. We'll just start with constraints before we move on to the other important stuff. There's huge constraints because we have 25 years worth of pre-existing users. And, you know, it's as important for them to know where things are going to continue to be as it is for us to continue to make them better. And so there's all that. And then there's the whole act of what happens when you're designing within constraints. And then there's the whole act of what happens when you take your designs and you start actually putting them in front of people. And so, like, my favorite, my undergraduate degree is in neuroscience, and my favorite thing to do is to do user-centered design and to actually have the design change and to be wrong and have, like, the, like, I love being wrong. Like, I never am right. So, I mean, like, the one day I'm actually right, I'll probably freak out. But I think that actually makes better design. And I think, you know, people like to, my dogmatism doesn't actually, I'm not all the way out there like, oh, the dribbleization of design. And I don't freak out about that stuff. Because like I said, I think it's important to play. Mm-hmm. And it's delicious and it keeps me motivated and it's fun to go and think in a corner about this stuff. But it gets so, like, that's, you know, what is that, like 3% of the actual act of designing a product is when you're putting pixels on a screen.
Yeah.
And it's the part that that's the part that the light gets shown on. And the light doesn't get shown on, like, the ethnographic work that Charles is doing, and it doesn't get shown on, like, the long, long conversations that we have internally with engineering to get around corners, and the long extrapolated sales isn't even the right word. It's, you know, getting everybody behind a direction so that they understand that the direction was not something you just cooked up and threw up on Dribbble. It was something that was informed by a whole bunch of other data. Yeah. And like, here's the direction we're moving. There's a current live wire that we're dealing with on the Photoshop team right now that's just like that. And it's going to take, you know, 78 emails and, you know, 15 direct person-to-person conversations for us to get a little decision made, but that was important, and that was design.
I think a lot of people, you know, that throw these, like, redesigns over the fence, you know, playing is one thing, but when you're actually proposing it is another, because you're also discounting the amount of hard work, like you said, that team took to get there and all the corporate challenges and limitation to technology, for example. I only experienced this like 3 years ago when I went from agency to work in-house at Evernote, trying to evolve the design of the Evernote product, but almost everything that we really wanted to do was limited by the fact that their sync engine just couldn't do what we wanted to do. And it took that experience for me to, like, understand that a little bit deeper. And in terms of, like, hiring designers, especially in a product world, like, sure, aesthetics are great, but I want people to think about the system. They're thinking more holistically. I mean, it's a lot easier to train someone how to stylize a layer. It's a lot harder to train someone how to work with multiple constituents and solve big problems and think high level.
Mm-hmm. Well, I say that, like, the one benefit of like drupalization and unsolicited redesigns, you know, when people focus on that, is they tend to focus on like the what if. So you push things further instead of starting off. So say if I'm working on a new feature for Photoshop, for instance. So I know the constraints and what we're able to do. So I'm going to start there instead of going like, oh, like crazy, like, you know, this is our time frame. I know what we can ship in this time frame. But, you know, if someone redesigns the whole interface and they just go, well, what if we can do this and this and this and this? So you start there and you can start paring it down. So you can start at a, you know, very radical level, and then you start building in the business constraints and what we can actually ship. So
I mean, I think that's totally fair and important. It's that, you know, I think most of this stuff on Dribbble, you know, because of the format, it's not usually that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
But we're Dribbble aside, like not talking about Dribbble, I totally think that it's important to do what you just said, Seth, which is like to be able to put down all of the garbage every once in a while and think big, because you need that to like stay alive on the inside, you know, and to be like, there's there's hope out in the future. And as a matter, like, that's how Project Recess got started, as a matter of fact. You know, like, we were so fed up with dealing with the constraints of the UI as it currently stands on Photoshop, and the constraints of the existing architecture as it actually stands. And we're like, well, what if we just shut all that off and got to start over?
Do you want to tell our listeners just a little bit about Project Recess, for those that maybe don't know what you can say about it anyway?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's, you know, that part of the cat's out of the bag, so we can talk about that. Basically, Project Recess is the idea of separating the core engine and architecture, say the canvas, from Photoshop, and then shutting down the UI that you know, so basically silencing it, and then building over on top of that through a somewhat complicated communication layer in the middle, but building a whole UI and experience, and I say experience, not just UI, on top of it, from HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And the cool thing about that is that, like, when we were first doing our first prototypes of like, well, could we do this? Could we pull this off? One of the first things we did was we made a blue pencil tool. So every time you click this button, we set the color to blue. We select this pencil tool preset, and we created a new layer called blue pencil. That means, you know, if you think about it, like, you can do anything that way. It doesn't have to be in the constraints of the tools that we know them today. And then that just sort of blew the whole thing wide open, and we could start. So Project Recess on this platform is basically the first experiment on that architecture, and it is a design space built on top of Photoshop or over, but it's not just the UI. It's an important little note.
Yeah. For the listeners who don't know, we just got a demo of Project Recess today, and it's a really amazing feature. We're really looking forward to testing it further with y'all.
Yins.
Really looking forward to testing it with Yins. Cool. Well, I mean, I think we went through pretty well sort of both sides of that issue. So let's go through sort of a real world scenario, unless, Anthony, you have more to talk about on that subject.
I have a lot that I want to say.
That you want to talk
I think
about.
I'll wait.
Okay.
I can go for days on that topic with real world examples.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Well, maybe let's dig into our scenario and we'll see what else we can come up with. So the scenario question is, let's say you're hosting an interview for a design position that's opened up at Adobe Photoshop. You meet with two designers. The first has a really incredible, aesthetically advanced, very adventurous portfolio. Maybe even an impressive following online with different channels, but the designs aren't fully reflective of products that have ever seen the light of day or that have shipped. The second designer has an underwhelming, almost conservative or boring portfolio, a smattering of followers online, but really small. Yet she has solid experience shipping products. And
ooh, I like it that it's a she. I like her already.
Both are she's for this scenario.
Okay.
So I guess talk about who you would hire, and be sure to keep it 100, as they say, as the children say.
What does that mean?
Keep it 100? It's keeping it 100%. I learned about this on the Larry Williams show, actually. It means being totally truthful, like keeping your answers 100% real, staying 100% real.
Okay.
So keep it 100.
I wouldn't know enough based on portfolios. I mean, the best interview that I've ever been to for product design, they had me do a project. That is the best way for me to know who to hire. So I haven't actually done this yet. Someday when I hire people, I'll do this. But put together, you know, a constraint, probably a project that has previously existed on Photoshop, and be like, all right, you know, here's, let's just say artboards. Let's say we were going to put artboards in Photoshop, hypothetically. We say, all right, how, you are the product designer for a feature called artboards in Photoshop. What would you do? And they would ask me, I'm sure, some questions like, well, what do you mean? Like, you know, and those questions would be so telling. If there were questions like, you know, if they just started drawing something, that would be very telling. Because if they started drawing boxes and arrows, I might be interested. And if they started asking me like, who's on the team, what are the personality like, you know, like what's the time frame, you know, those questions would tell me a lot about how they problem solve, and that's what I would be looking for. So some portfolios are actually really good at articulating this, and some are terrible. Like portfolios that look at the process, I am much more drawn to.
The challenging thing about a visual design portfolio is that you also don't know what they actually did. You have to get down to the root of, like, were they a single designer? Did someone give them wireframes? Was it a group project? Did they do conceptual design and all the, you know, like, what exactly were they responsible for? Because I look at portfolios all the time. We don't interview a whole lot here at Funsize, but when I was at Evernote, we looked at hundreds of portfolios. And we would see the same design work in multiple people's portfolios. Right. So the first thing is like, is this person a liar? Right. And then it's kind of, you know, for me, it's figuring out, well, how do they think? Are they an old school designer that thinks that someone is doing wireframes and handing it to them and they want to make them pretty? Or are they the kind of person that wants to do all of it? I also like test. I know a lot of people don't like the test thing, but you can get a lot of really interesting things from that. At Evernote, we had a simple test. Sketch us a mechanism to tag a note, because in that test we would know immediately if they understood even modern paradigms, and we would see if they would like propose something that was actually doable or something that was more conceptual.
When you actually proposed these tests, was it a feature that was brand new, like that you guys have been thinking about for a long time, or is it something that kind of existed and then you just be modifying?
With this particular test, it's actually it's like a core feature of Evernote tagging. It was a test of first to make sure that they understood what Evernote does, and it was also a test to kind of see if they understood like just basic tagging paradigms. So just like drawing, like one of the tests,
like literally, when you say tagging paradigms, you mean literally the tokenization paradigm?
Yeah, just, you know, like we would say, okay, photo sharing app, you have an image, show
me.
So
you live under a rock was part of it?
Okay. Yeah. Right. Show me the pattern for doing tags. And some people would do like what you would expect, like a very modern approach. Well, you just type in the tag. And if there's one that already exists, you click it in. You go to the menu and you go, file, tag, and like...
You actually had people that failed that test in that way? I guess that's a good weed out.
Well, the reason why I brought it up, if it was something you guys were focusing on versus something like, you know, like improving something that already existed. So I almost feel like in the past when I've had to do... the stuff interviewing for companies, sometimes it almost felt like they were like getting free work, you know. Younger designers, younger designers are applying for companies and they ask, will you redesign this portion of our application? So like, here's the problem. And so it almost feels like, you know, if they're doing that, you know, doing, say they have 10 people interviewing for position, so they have 10 different solutions that they can be like, oh, you know, like, here's 10 different ideas.
Oh, no, we just make them do that on the whiteboard right in front of us. Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about like take home, like almost take home homework. I've seen that quite often.
Do you guys do that? Like, do you guys do tests? And if you do, do you pay people for the work?
We don't do tests. I know that, but the last hiring cycle that I was a part of, each participant, like when it was perfectly organized, each participant was responsible for evaluating a certain segment of the interview process. So, you know, this person's in charge of cultural fit, and this person's in charge of figuring out if they understand, and it was up to that person to figure out how to structure that part of the interview. But I'm not sure that we've cracked the code where we work personally. But that place that I went on that interview with a while back, they had me do a, they're like, don't spend any more than an hour, but here's a design an app for a 1,000-person company who needs to find and book meeting rooms. And so they said that's all the guidance given. They're like, it can just be sketches, it could be just pencils on paper, but design an app, don't spend more than an hour. So then what happens, right, is that you have to think about a problem, you have to explain, you know, the information you don't have, you have to say, well, I'm assuming the following things, but I, not knowing those things, I'm going to just use this as scratch data for that. And, you know, so you got that. And then I had another person who was like, okay, since we're a full, you know, what we do here is product design, like I need to know that you know how to talk with customers. And so I had to do an interview with somebody. He's like, all right, pretend this is an app. That was actually Redfin. Show me how you would talk to me about, you know, interview me about your app. Like you're user researching for this app, which I thought was also really important, because if you can't do that kind of work, to me, you have no business designing interface. Like being able to interview users and get information and feedback from users that is actionable is super important. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing they had me do was design something on the fly, which I thought was also telling, similar to your test thing. And, you know, it was a pretty simple. It was totally like the gut check thing, like, okay, do you know what a tag is?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But like, that's just a nice rounded way to look at things. It's not a visual portfolio.
Right.
This landscape is just so different too, you know, because 3 years ago, I think there was a lot of people, at least that I knew, that come from the web design side or like were agency art directors, and their minds were in completely different places than the needs of a product company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that this is different in San Francisco where you guys are, but here in Austin, there's our community of product designers is still growing. So I kind of look at that too, like, okay, well, maybe you got a great visual designer. If they seem to possess the desire to want to think systematically, and they prove that they can do good work, I see that the area to prove them. Or if they're a great interaction designer that can do great mock-ups, I look at that too. Not everyone has equal skill set. You know, like, I think it's kind of, you can't expect everyone to be able to excel at all these. Like, you know, we have a couple of designers here that are kind of like some that are heavy weighted on conceptual design versus interaction design. But yeah, and I think you kind of have, to me, I think the best test, if we're on that topic, is really just put someone to work for, you know, on a contract or something.
That is totally what the end of that, if I had moved forward with that company, they would have done a contract before they did hire. That's awesome that you guys do it that way. I find it fascinating because we visit a lot as Photoshop designers, we visit a lot of design companies. So our agencies, we've been to Pinterest, been to Square, Facebook. So we looked around, and it's interesting to me, and I'd love to know more about what you guys do in terms of like hiring the full stack designer. You know, like at Square, it's still very, you know, maybe they've changed, so I don't want to speak out of school, but when I was there were visual designers, there were front end designers, you know, there were production designers. There was just like little tiny bit lit jobs, whereas Pinterest is still sort of full stack product design where you're responsible for your whole feature, soup to nuts. What's it like at Evernote? I don't know.
Well, at Evernote, it was, you know, we had two product designers that were working on one product. We were working on Sketch, but we were supporting eight platforms in parallel. So iPhone, iPad, Android mobile, Android tablet, Win32 desktop, Mac desktop, the whole thing. So that was actually really challenging because, for each platform, we had 4 engineers, 2 dedicated QA engineers, but only 2 designers for everything. With FunSize, we knew when we started this company that we didn't want to be a big agency, and we wanted to keep our prices down enough that we could work with early stage and mid stage tech companies. But we also knew that we needed to future proof our company. So we kind of, the way that we talk about it is just in the T-shaped model. We expect all of our designers to be generally versed in user-centered design, interaction design, information architecture, conceptual design, visual design, implementation design. We don't do any technology here at all, not even any front-end development work. But like I said, everyone in that T-shape is going to be different. Some people are going to be stronger at others, but it's really important for us because our teams are 2 or 3 people, and it's important that those 3 team members, whether are able to all equally contribute in some way. So sometimes we have to piece the right people together if it's a very unique project, but most of the time everyone can support each other if there's one area where someone's stronger than another.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just going to look at Seth and go, yins.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important to be a jack of all trades. So I know that's an important, when we look for people at Adobe, at least from the time I was hired, the director who hired me, that's one of the things he said, that that's what they look for in individuals. So I almost think that the character and their personality, whether they give up easily or, right. Just the the pursuit of the knowledge, the problem solving and, the desire to actually sit down and think about stuff, so.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Brady, you went a little bit into, if the candidate, you present them with a thing or a spec or something, and you tell them, that them asking you questions is very indicative of, what they're going to be like to work with and how their skills develop. What are some other things you notice about candidates when you present them with,
Well, just projects? In full transparency, I have not hired anyone at Adobe. So this is all fairly hypothetical.
Yeah.
But if-ins I were hiring.
If-ins, yuns, yins were.
Yins were wanting me to do some hiring. I think since you've done a lot of hiring, this is fun because I can pretend. It's one of the things I worry about, which might be a different way of looking at your question, mm-hmm. is lack of any questions. Mm. Because I think, we live in a very youthful culture. We celebrate youth a lot. We hire young. I think youth is extremely important, but with youth often comes a lack of wisdom. And I think I would love to hire more young people, just for the record. We need a lot more young people in XD. I am way too old. but I want to hire people who understand that they may not know what they do not know. And that's really important. Because I think, it's also interesting, because I'll just flip that coin a little bit to something Seth said earlier about, getting rid of all the constraints. Sometimes hiring people that do not know what they do not know is glorious, because they just wrecking ball straight into something that you would have never gone into. Mm-hmm. So maybe what I would want to look for is a combination of humility and complete ballsiness. because there's a phrase I've been really fond of lately, and I don't know, I gotta figure out who the actual quote person, I need to give credit where this is due, because it's not my quote, but strong opinions loosely held. I think that's what I want to hire. I would hire for I want you to have an opinion on these things, but I want you to have the self-awareness to know that you could be wrong, and when you're wrong, you're gonna let it go.
Let it back off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a hard personality type to find. Yeah,
that's humility is one of our company values. I mean, that to me, that's more important than any skill. The right person that shows that they can be taught. You know, they have that humility and strong opinions too, right? I mean, I agree with that. I'm going to look up that quote as well.
Yeah. I mean, without naming any names, a client from way back.
It's always a good start.
Yeah, yeah. A client from way back or way in the future. You don't know what time period I'm talking about. Their company is structured in such a way that it seemed like it was really hard to get anything done because there were a lot of strong opinions. And nobody really knew who was in charge. And nobody was really making the call. So, yeah, just a lot of wrecking balls, not a lot of weighing down.
I think I give that a lot of thought, too. We hire, I think, really well in our organization for those types of people. Mm-hmm. Like, we think we want these mm-hmm. wrecking ball personalities, but at some point, you need to have a mix, right? Like, mm-hmm. and I give this a lot of thought, but I don't have a really cogent... I haven't cracked the code yet, but I feel like the team, the whole of the team is really important. Like, you don't want to hire all of the same type. Like, you need the zeitgeist. Like, the, mm-hmm. you know, just like one of my favorite things about working on Photoshop is when we actually get to execute with a small multidisciplinary team where everybody's working together to solve a problem. There's engineering represented, there's product management represented, there's design represented, and we are all, I mean, we disagree, and that's totally fair, but there's mutual respect, mm-hmm. and the personality types, like that mix, like I've had it in fleeting moments where I was like, ah, like one of the things I did at Adobe before I worked on Photoshop was try to build an entrepreneurship program inside of Adobe. And the whole premise was we're going to take one dev, one designer, one engineer, and one researcher, and we're going to make this team that's going to get out in front of other stuff with no constraints. And the first team that we put together was glorious. We just had like ideas upon ideas, and we learned a whole lot, and we threw a whole bunch of stuff away. So we tried to create another team, mm-hmm. and we just took who was around, like who was free to build the other team, and it completely failed. Hmm. Like, same model, same expectations, same format, same freedom, different people, totally. The second team just sucked. That's a strong word. They didn't suck. But it didn't work the right. same way the first team worked.
Right.
The dynamics were off. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you, like, maybe when you run a company that's small and like fun size, you get to like lovingly curate that.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to do that, and we can rotate people in a certain way around projects, so the clients get to work with almost everyone, and our designers get to touch a lot of different projects. You know, it's a luxury that we have. It's really hard, to do that. I'm sure at Photoshop when. You know, there's the teams that you guys have and the things you're working on are so big, and it's Photoshop. We can curate it a little bit.
Yeah. And I would say to our benefit as well, usually our clients are, like Anthony said earlier, early stage startups. The design, at least initially, is fairly low stakes. You know, if we change something initially, you know, we're not going to have 10,000 angry emails from NASA telling right. us that this one feature change ruined a launch or something. Yeah. So,
but I love working with those product managers that are also in the same way, like fearless
yeah.
to remove a feature,
yeah.
But still have humility and still are talking to the customers, but aren't scared to take something away to push it in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of the glory of Playground. It removes that, it lets us be fearless. Because mm-hmm. we can leave everyone who wants to be left alone, and change things only for the people who want things drastically changed, which is kind of fun.
I have one question, going back to the projects that don't ship. I'm sure it's the same in Photoshop, and I'll ask you here after I finish this sentence. But at Evernote, we designed so many things that never shipped, and a lot of them were like really good ideas for like separate products. Some of them were really good ideas for features. Some were really good ideas for redesigns, and some of them were just experimental stuff. And even though most of them didn't ship, it seemed like from a broad spectrum, some of those things gave us inspiration to do something that did ship. And so, you know, like Facebook has these conferences that they do and they talk about their failures, right? But I think it's all, it could be almost kind of looked at the other way, like the things that we didn't finish, but, you know, didn't ship, but it helped
seeds.
Us learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Seeds yeah. for future innovation.
Have you guys worked, like, what can you say about, like, in your team, like, how many things have you worked on that didn't ship that?
Well, before I started working on Photoshop, so I've been in Adobe for 3 years. So there's 2 years of my time at Adobe where I worked on stuff that hasn't made it out the door. So I have a lot of experience in this realm. And so that's like two or three projects I worked on internally that haven't seen the light of day yet or never will.
But some of that stuff is actually going to see the light of day now, right under different cover, sort of, right?
Yeah. But, you know, like a lot of that is just internal learning. You know, like what can we take from these projects within SHIP and apply this to other teams or, you know, other projects? So they kind of like, it's almost like we have them on our computer, on our you know, stored up in the cloud. And then, like, when another team has a question about something, we can share that and just pull it out of storage and be like, look, we thought about this problem 3 years ago, and here's all the solutions that we have for this. So you guys don't need to think about those phases of the project, and we can pull that out and share that with folks.
Oh, my God. One of the hardest things about working on Photoshop is that, you know, we talk to people so often, and we get excited about solving all manner of problems. So we have, like, this huge, huge cloud file in the cloud filled with folders of stuff that is ostensibly still active, and someone from another part of the company would come over and go, I've got this idea for you, it is awesome. And they're like, I'm like, yep, uh-huh. And they tell me their idea, I'm like, yep, uh-huh.
That goes back to the humility bit, you know. You just have to be like,
especially
when,
awesome.
When users, you know, like your customers tell us, like, you know, like, this, like, if you fix this, and it's just like, you know, like, and you kind of gotta be a punching bag and take it, because it'll really stress, like, at least on Photoshop, it can be stressful.
So as designers, like, that living in that space of working on things that are purely conceptual or things that don't ship, like, I overheard a couple designers at Funsize the other day talking about a very high profile client of ours the work was all conceptual. Mm-hmm. It was more work like, where is this company going? Mm-hmm. Right, versus almost everything else that we work on that actually gets built. And I think there's a big group of we're probably divided in half. 50% of us that want to be connected to things that hit the market and that people are using, and working on things that are always going to be experimental. But those things that, like, that you worked on, or some of these things that never go live, like, I think it has an effect on designers sometimes, especially at this other interview process. Like, because I've been, like, sometimes when I'm being interviewed by potential clients, sometimes the first question they ask me is, how many things have you shipped that are in the App Store that I can look at right now? And they'll look at it and they'll evaluate it on the spot in the meeting. And so I think that's a similar scenario that designers sometimes have, because some of the conceptual things that they did, they can't talk about, or they can't show.
Seth has probably got a lot to say about that.
That's why I was being very big.
I
that one thing,
that
one thing.
I know that there's so many of those one things. But to your earlier point, there's the good and the bad about the stuff that gets mothballed, or doesn't ship, or doesn't go out the door. It inspires you to, like, that whatever nugget will somehow feed in future work, right? It'll always be there. Like, there was something I talked about earlier in our demo that I can't talk about right now. That is totally one of those things. I'm so excited to work on it, but I'm not going to be able to work on it for like a year or two.
Right.
If ever, I might have to hand off all the designs to Seth or to somebody else. Not that they're fully baked or anything, but that's the good part. But then we feel like there's like this bad part too, where I have met designers who they think, maybe they did, I'm not saying they didn't, crack a code. They're like, I have this great idea, and they didn't want it, and they didn't want it, and I'm going to keep it. And the next time I see a nail, I am going to hit it with this hammer. And so I wonder, has that ever happened to you? Or you're like, oh, I really want to try like this inverted scroll thing with like how much of the, I don't know, how much... There's a couple of people I've met who keep bringing up the same ideas, and I worry about becoming one of them, because I'm like, oh, I have this idea, and I think it would be really awesome, and I just need to figure out how to stuff it in something.
I I've experienced that a lot in the past. I haven't really experienced that too much with this group, but I have experienced something similar where people are down because the design, their whole design wasn't able to be implemented in a like a .x release.
You mean that completely,
yeah,
or like the whole thing?
Yeah. Oh. So, you know, I think that's a part, that's one of the struggles with the younger designers, because they don't necessarily understand that this big design vision will take multiple releases to get there. So I guess going back to the interview question, I'd probably want, the next time I interview up someone, I probably will see if they understand how this design can get broken down into this, mm-hmm. and how that will ship over. Mm-hmm. But a lot,
that is a super good skill. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of, I don't know how to interview for that either, but I want to figure it out, because if you have got this huge vision and they're like, yes, I love that, but now how do we break it out? You know, like what little thing can we do here that's going to set us up really well for these? And I do not know how to test for that, but that would be really, really awesome.
That's the biggest challenge I've seen with like traditional designers and bringing them to this space, because they're used to like mapping out their whole art direction and then just building the product, right? And then they don't know if it fails or not, versus like living in this incremental enhancement world that I think we all live in.
By the way, I just thought you should know this, because you said you had two designers on Sketch.
Well, my brother and I used to work there. This was before Funstyles was started.
Right.
Yeah.
But you had two designers on Sketch.
Yes.
It was you and your brother?
Yeah, only two.
That's so cool. We have two designers on Photoshop.
Yeah. Okay.
67 engineers.
Okay, explain. Go ahead. Yeah. 67 engineers, two designers.
So outnumbered.
Is it like three or four scrum teams between both of us?
There's eight scrum teams.
We sit on
eight,
so each day.
But there's eight total scrum teams. If you want to make it sound as awful as possible. Yeah.
Well, how many
we're going for
QA
awful
engineers?
Here.
Huh?
How many QA engineers?
QE was included in the 67.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. I don't think a lot of people understand that, you know, like they, you know, you're going to be on a small team and working with an even bigger team. And
yeah, and that's another one of the things, like if you were going to hire somebody else to work on Photoshop, I mean, we had completely lucked out with Seth. He was like awesome. But
well, Photoshop ships. I think that was one of
well,
the
it's all, but
well,
no,
actually,
but
one of the selling points was, yeah, you'll definitely get your stuff out in the world.
Yeah.
But the hard part, I mean, one of the hardest parts for me is that, you know, I am happiest when I'm working on the small multi. If I'm designing, if I'm not just managing a, you know, a program or something, then I want to work with like five to six people, mm-hmm. maybe seven, maybe 10 at the max, you know, like if I'm working on something. And, but if I, but working across teams where you, there's an engineer on Photoshop, or she called it drive-by design. Made me cry. Like tears came out of my eyes. Like that's the worst. You don't want to do drive-by design, because that, you know, that's
And I mean, and then being able to kind of tell, like, okay, what should I be focusing on this week, and you know, being able to prioritize, you know, your duties for the week, mm-hmm. and just sitting down and be like, okay, I need to do this for this engineering group. And then, you know, like, so this can hold off. So even though people are pestering you or asking for stuff, you'd be like, okay, no, I just got to focus on this for a day. So, I mean, that's pretty important in our roles, so.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. You guys, we have covered an awesome amount of stuff today. It has been such a pleasure having you guys in office this week, and getting to meet you guys and see that awesome demo today.
Well, thank you so much for having us. We had such fun. You guys are the best.
Are you guys going to be? You guys are going to be at the party, right? So when we close up here, we're going to go to the party.
We're
going to
party crazy.
Time to drink. Time to do South by Right. So Brady, how can people find you on Twitter?
I am at Brady. That's BRADEE.com. I'm Brady. Just Brady. Oh my God. I have the .com. I have my own domain also, but I have it. There's nothing on there. Right now. There hasn't been anything on Brady.com in a long time.
You haven't shipped yet. Oh no.
You can find me on Photoshop.
Nice. And Seth, how can people follow you?
Just at Seth Shaw.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Exactly how it sounds. Excellent. Well, Anthony, how can people find you?
People can find me at Mantwan on Twitter, MANTWN, and funsize.co.
and at FunSize on Twitter.
Yes.
We locked that one down. I am Danielle. I'm your temp host this week. You can find me at Danielle Moser. Feel free to tweet at FunSize if you want to request topics or just respond to this episode. And be sure to rate the Hustle podcast on iTunes. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button because we love to see that. So thanks again, Photoshop team. And we'll be back at you next time on Hustle. Yay. Woo!
Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Sure. It was awesome.
Today's episode is brought to you by Pingboard, an employee directory that will supercharge your team. Today's best companies use Pingboard to help their growing team continue to feel small. The Pingboard company directory lets your team learn about each other in a way that's fun and engaging and ensures that they'll always have important info about their team wherever they are. With Pingboard, you have one place to organize everything about your team, from private employee data to shared photos, contact info, and fun facts. Now with the Pingboard Vacation Calendar, your team will always know when someone's out. With a few taps of the Pingboard mobile app, anyone can share that they're working remote, sick, or that they'll be in Belize scuba diving next month. Show your team how much you love them by trying Pingboard out for free at pingboard.com. Hustle is brought to you by FunSize, a digital product design agency in Austin, Texas that creates delightful, innovative products for mobile web. Visit us on Twitter, @FunSize, or visit our